This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Phone lines are open. That's right. 100 degrees of Danny, Dave, and Moore is officially underway.
100 degrees.
It's 100 degrees outside. It's 6 degrees of Danny, Dave, and Moore.
There's 100 people on the list.
There are 100 people on the list. That must have been what I was thinking. 6 degrees of Danny, Dave, and Moore is underway with 100 names on the list. You can call in our special number for the hotline, 206-726-5484. And you can call in anytime we're on the air between now and a week from Friday, July 29th. And if you get one of the 100 names on that list to call in on your behalf, whoever has the best interview will then win season tickets, a ticket to each home game in the upcoming Seahawks season, which is a really cool prize. And personally, I'm one of the names on the list is a guy that's now in the news, and it's Richard Sherman. You could kill two birds with one stone, because if the criteria is best interview, as judged by the highly subjective panel of Jessamyn Curtis and the three of us, Richard Sherman would probably be a pretty compelling interview subject right about now.
I think I would bow out and say, sick him, Jim. Sick him. You're the only guy that ever rattled him.
Well, I don't think he'll call, though, do you? I mean, we've got a bunch of people that I think will call, but I don't think Sherman's on the list. I mean, he's on the list, but the odds of him calling? I mean, Vegas, what would that be, 100-1, 500-1?
Probably.
He might, though. He's you never know what
he's brash. Yeah, he'll come in here and try to take us on.
I would say that the odds, whatever the odds were of him calling in to this specific show, got worse after this particular exchange.
What I don't quite understand is Darrell Bell's calling plays that he thinks are going to work, and yet you feel like you maybe have a better handle of what should be called.
No, I just had a prior experience, so we talked about it. But let me guess, you have better play call. Let me guess, you have better experience. Then you should probably kind of, you know, stop.
You flustered him, Jim.
Dave, you like that one, don't you?
I love it, especially the yet. And yet, you feel that you have a better handle on it? Especially the handle on it, maybe, is my favorite part. So, yeah. The further we get away from this, the more ridiculous it becomes. Just, I don't care what era of football you're in. You don't have players. You can't have players second-guessing, play-calling. And obviously, this whole thing came up after, was it 2 years ago against the Rams? It was a Thursday night game. They threw a pass from the 1 yard line, and it almost got picked off by one of my ex teammates' son. It was Hager. Britt Hager was the dad. I can't remember the kid's name, and it ended up being ruled out of bounds. But he runs down the distance of the sidelines, goes down there and starts screaming and yelling, and was talking about, you know, running the ball down there, and just felt like, you know, he very passionately had some say in what kind of play they should call. And so, look, we all have felt that frustration, but you just can't have your players doing that. And then they had a talk. And I missed all of this because the very first question of Richard Sherman's press conference after he supposedly apologized to Pete about his behavior on the sidelines, he said, somebody asked him a question, and he said something like, well, you know, we all get a chance to weigh in or something like that. And I was like, that's it. So I just closed my book, put it in my bag, and walked out. So I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's insubordination. I don't care what era you're from. You can't have that. And like I said, it gets more ridiculous the further away we get from it. But unfortunately, I missed the part where Jim asked that question. And then what did he do, Jim? He threatened to take away your press credential or something?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, I'm going to ruin your career. And I wondered how he's going to do that. And it was because he said,
Jim said, hey, mister, if anybody's going to ruin it, it's going to be me.
Well, I was thinking I didn't have much of a career left to ruin. But the reason this came up is because he had this interview with Robert Klemko in SI.com. And so there's a story this morning. And so we're going back over. This is what Sherman second guessing, third guessing, fourth guessing, going back to criticizing Pete Carroll and how they've lost their way. And it's just, to me, it struck me as being more of the same things that we've heard from Sherman. But I just didn't, I feel like he's lost his way and that the Seahawks really haven't.
Yeah, here's the quote. The quote from Robert Klemko, and this is Richard Sherman talking about the Seahawks. They've lost their way. It's as simple as that. They've just lost their way. When you make too many mistakes over a long period of time, you kind of dig yourself a hole. And then you, when you backtrack, you got to make a bunch of rash decisions to try and fill the hole and hope that it holds up. When we were rolling, it was an environment for pure competitors. When it becomes something else, then it's more difficult to thrive in.
Yeah, and so I, what I got out of that one, and it brought back another bad memory from him, is that he was second-guessing who they did keep on the team and who they didn't keep on the team. And I know one of the players that was sort of a flashpoint was Cason Williams. Everybody thought that Cason Williams, and Cason Williams last year, he had a great preseason. He really did, but the Seahawks, once again, like you say, Jim, felt like they were keeping the player that would best give them the chance to win. As a player, you don't get to weigh in on that, okay? You know, and look, maybe if you know, he was a quiet, respectful guy, or maybe he was Cam Chancellor, you might go to him and say, hey, you know. But I've never seen a player or a personnel guy ever ask the players what they think. And I always say this, I have this quote, the players don't know. They don't know. And so, you know, that's – and maybe later on you might say, okay, we don't know for sure if that would have been a better keep to keep Cason Williams, but you just can't have your players weighing in on that stuff. I remember being disappointed. I remember going, man, they cut that guy and they kept this guy, but you don't talk about it, and you're not – that's not your job to run the team and be the personnel guy. So brought up another bad memory from Richard Sherman and another reason why I'm glad he's gone.
What's your reaction when you hear Sherman talking now? And I said this because – it's going to be a story through the course of the season, but how do you feel? Does it make you angry at Sherman? Does it make you angry at the team? Is it not anger you feel, but indifference? What's your reaction when you hear Sherman's opinion about the Seahawks, the team where he's responsible for, in my mind, the most important play in franchise history?
Yeah, well, that's true, and he was. He was a fantastic player and a fifth rounder, and I always said how much I watching him in college is like, wow, I can't believe what did they see in him, and they saw something. He was phenomenal. I thought he was the best corner in the league, and he may still be. We'll see after he comes back from this injury, but, you know, the other thing is that, look, you, my first feeling, my gut feeling always is, people are underestimating the Seahawks this year. And thinking that Pete Carroll has lost his way is ridiculous. This guy's been doing it for a long time. And just because, you know, that play was called on the goal line against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and just because they didn't keep a guy that you thought, I mean, what mistakes? You know, if you're making that many mistakes and you've gone that far astray, why did, other than last year, you had, what, 5 years with double-digit wins, two trips to the Super Bowl, and five trips to the playoffs straight. I mean, that's not an indication that things are going wrong. Now, it's trending the wrong way, 9-7, but look, that's, you know, that's, that happens to teams eventually. I mean, you're asking an awful lot if you think that his message is all of a sudden taking a turn for the worse.
What do you think when you hear Sherman complaining about it?
Well, it just seems like more of the same, and...
So do you roll your eyes? Do you find yourself?
Yeah, I guess I roll my eyes, and I just, you want how I actually feel,
yes,
about it? Well, because I know that you're supposed to just wish someone well when they leave and let bygones be bygones, but I hope he has a poor rest of his career. I really do. I mean, you know, it's, I guess part of it, and it's not.
Do you think it's personal?
No. Well, yeah, maybe. Actually, that whole thing that happened at the VMAC, it's not really that.
You didn't care
just,
about that
I don't,
at the time.
I don't, it's kind of strange because in some guys I really like when they're cocky and other guys I don't. And I think I heard today, you know, Sherman was fun when he was playfully cocky and, you know, doing different stuff early in his career. And then it started getting, it got, like Dave, you would say, too big for his britches. You know, the smartest guy in the room all the time. I'm never wrong. I'm Richard Sherman. And so after a while, I went from thinking, man, this guy's a great interview to thinking, man, this guy's a jerk. You know, so that's, I hope he plays poorly down there. I hope that that karma catches up to him and that he's going to get a taste of humble pie and he's going to get the whole damn pie shoved in his face. That's what I'm honestly hoping for as a human being. As a sports talk guy, I suppose I should sit here and go, well, you know, gee, Richard, you know, it's going to be a fun rivalry and looking forward to seeing him here again. I hope he sucks, okay? I do. I hope he's terrible. I don't want to see him play well down there, and I want to see him regret the decision that he made to go to San Francisco, because part of this is I get sick of the criticism of Pete Carroll. I mean, you know, and man, then John Schneider, the personnel decisions. Well, that's the same guy. Okay, the guy who cut Cason Williams is the same guy that picked you in the fifth round and saw a lot in you, and you're going to question what he's doing in his job like you've got all the answers? So I just, I hope the guy's terrible. I do. I honestly, if it's personal, I don't care. It's just, he's got all the money and he's doing fine, but he's got this Achilles injury. He's 30 years old. He doesn't have Earl Thomas back there. I don't think he's going to have a good season. I think it's going to be another cornerback, even though he's an elite one and he's maybe a future Hall of Famer, certainly a Ring of Honor guy. But I don't think he's going to have the same success down there in San Francisco that he had here in Seattle.
Well, I think whether he does or not is going to be one of the really interesting, intriguing storylines this year, because corners have not fared well leaving here. Byron Maxwell, I can't say how much he meant to this defense before he left. And then last year we saw a little bit of that coming back. He started to play really well at the end of the season. So if Sherman is not Richard Sherman, then you'll wonder, how much does Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor mean to him? How much does this scheme and the way they run it mean to his effectiveness? So, and I guess I don't feel like it. I don't want him personally to fail just to fail. I think it'll be a good matchup between him and Russell Wilson. What about you, Danny?
I don't have it in me to dislike Sherman. I've known him as a reporter covering him. I know that he's too smart for his own good, and he's got flaws. I like Richard. It's made me rethink the type of personality that he has. I tend to like really brash, talkative athletes. It's why I liked Marshall Henderson, the Ole Miss shooter, guy that was waving at the crowd. I like guys who are kind of punkish in the way that they talk to people and that
Boogie
don't really
Cousins.
Care about. I love Boogie Cousins, the Diaz brothers in the MMA in the UFC. Are an example of that. I'm trying to think. Conor McGregor is another guy.
I'm wondering if you're still going to like Boogie Cousins on your team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But here's what, because what I've decided is that personality has a very distinct shelf life, and it always turns. It's like milk. Eventually it's going to have a due date that's going to go by, and you're going to open it up, and it's going to be like, oh, what happened here? Because what Sherman is saying, it's in line with all of the other things that we've heard him say over the years. It's just been focused on people outside the team. It's kind of how ornery he was about Jim Harbaugh, but we liked it because Harbaugh was on the other side. And I realized that when you've got a personality like that, that you don't sort of force to conform. You just hey, you go be you and fire off in any direction you want. And eventually it's not going to be Skip Bayless that he's sort of hollering at. It's going to be Jim Moore. And I'm going to feel differently about that. So while I'm not angry at what he's saying, and I'm not even that surprised, but there's a part of me that's a big giant eye roll that you're like, okay, this is the way things are going to go. And it's not like I actively wish ill for him because I genuinely like Richard, but it's one of those, he's a guy that I look at, I'm like, you're just too smart for your own good, man. You're just too smart. You're trying to outthink everybody, and you're going to end up spoiling a relationship with the city. Because look, no matter how well things go in San Francisco, his best football will have been played in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll all get over it, and he'll come back, and he'll be able to be in the Ring of Honor and raise the 12th man flag. I think eventually all that stuff will happen. But there's going to be some testy times between now and then, if this is any indication, because he's a really difficult person who believes he always knows best.
Well, I'll tell you what, if 5-10 years from now, and I do believe that's going to happen too, and always bring up the Brett Favre thing. Remember how much everybody in Green Bay hated Brett Favre when he went to Minnesota? What was it 2 years, 3 years ago? He's out there with Bart Starr, all's forgiven, the whole thing. I wonder if, at the end of this, one of two things I think is going to happen, my prediction, 10 years down the road, is one is going to be that he's like, you know what, man, I did that whole thing just as trying to get people riled up and trying to sell things and trying to be controversial and trying to be, one of those guys. And that was just part of my act. That's what I was. Kind of like the boss, it'll either
early on, maybe with Sherm.
Yeah, well, I liked the stuff early on, too. And he was smart, man. We'd ask him questions, and I'd still never forget the one about third down. It's like, what's happening on third down? Well, nothing special, or else people would be doing it on first and second down, and we wouldn't be the number one defense in the league. I'm like, this kid's smart. He gets it, everything. But, now I feel like if he doesn't own up to that, then I'm going to be really disappointed. But I think it's going to be either that, or he's going to be ashamed of himself. He's going to wish he hadn't. Look, in my 50s, I'm ashamed of things that I did in my 40s, 30s, 20s. Same thing when I was in my 40s. I'm like, why didn't I just let that go? Why didn't I just, take the upper road on this? Why didn't, the high road? And, if it's either of those two things, I'll be okay with it. But I seriously doubt that he continues to sort of fester and become this person who, has bad things to say about especially Pete Carroll. Just like you said, Jim, I couldn't put it better. You know, he's turned on the people that gave him a chance in the very beginning, and probably not very many people would have. And he got to speak his mind. He got even through that. A lot of coaches would have canned him for what he did on the sidelines and then the following week. So that, to me, is if that happens, then fine. But the other thing is personally disappointing to me is that the guys I played football with at Stanford, and I know Stanford's supposed to be this, you know, big academic place and everybody, you know, and I get lots of heat for it and everything. I'm like, no, you know, the thing is when I left Stanford, I had more questions than answers, and I thought it was really good in that way. And the guys that I played with are some of the best people I know. And, you know, they just are humble and get it. And I feel like, you know, somebody who's smart is someone who doesn't think they are. And if he thinks he's really that smart, like he missed it. Like you missed the whole thing about what Stanford's about. And so for me, that's disappointing. And he kind of perpetuates that sort of know-it-all thing that everybody, I think, erroneously thinks about Stanford, you know, players. And I'm sure there's some cocky people out there that went to Stanford and, you know, bring it up all the time and everything. But I just, to me, I feel like if you don't come out of there with more questions and answers and you're not more of a thoughtful person, then you missed what the entire experience was about. So it's kind of, I don't want to say it's embarrassing, but just the too big for his britches, know-it-all stuff, I can't stand it. And by the way, those are two terms that I did learn at Stanford.
Well, one of his complaints, and I know Robert Klemko talked to John Clayton, and you probably have some sound from that, Danny, but and I suppose you could agree, well, not suppose, I do agree with Sherman if Klemko's correct on what he got from Richard with that they needed to do a better job of drafting offensive linemen. I think we talked about that, and I would agree with Sherman on that if that was one of his points, and that the Seahawks were committing to bigger contract guys as opposed to guys with lesser contracts and more potential. But this business about Pete losing his competitive nature, I don't see that at all.
Here was Robert Klemko talking about that.
You know, I've not only talked to Richard, but a number of the veterans there, and I think that a lot of those guys feel like that sense of competition that it was all built on, where the best man is going to win the job, no matter his draft status, no matter his how much he gets paid. I think that they felt that started to disappear after the Super Bowl against New England. For, you know, whatever reason, they think Pete Carroll kind of lost the qualities that really made the team great.
Here's the thing about that, and this is, I don't doubt that players think that, and I don't doubt that every one of the players who thinks that is 100% wrong, because if any error the Seahawks have made in this time, it's that they've held on to guys too long. It's that they've held on to veterans instead of saying, we're going to get someone cheaper and younger in here to do that job, that they've held on to guys because they believe in the core of that team. This has not been some sort of, and if you're telling me that a decision over a guy who was maybe going to make the team as a fifth or a sixth wideout in Kason Williams represents the reason that this franchise or this team has waned, that to me is absolutely crazy. So that's how we start 6 degrees of Danny, Dave, and Moore. If you can get Richard Sherman to call in after that, call in to talk to us, you probably deserve the season-long Seahawks tickets after that. But no, seriously, there are 100 names on there. And there are some people with local ties like Carissa Thompson, who is now at Fox Sports, who was from Inglemore, went to Inglemore High School here. There's other local athletes. There's Jack Lambert. There's all sorts of different people there. If you can get one of them to call on your behalf to 206-726-5484 anytime between today and next Friday, a week from this Friday, the 29th, you'll be eligible to win. If they call on your behalf, you'll be eligible to win. We're choosing the best interview, and that person will win the season tickets. It should be a really fun contest. Now it's time for us here to take two.
Take two. Viva la France, who won the World Cup over the weekend.
Wait, it's the sweet tones of Jessamyn McIntyre.
A triumphant
return to the ring.
Very triumphant.
What's going on?
Nothing, man. I'm just hanging. I was hanging out with a bunch of celebrities over the weekend.
Coolest person you saw at Lake Tahoe.
Big shot.
Celebs? Coolest person that I saw. Celebs, yes. I'm a baby celeb. There were so many cool people. It was very cool to see Steph Curry playing with his father, Dell. And then Ray Allen was also in that pairing. But Jerome Bettis and Terrell Davis and Jared Allen were having the most fun.
How big is Jerome?
He's huge.
Is he big?
Yeah, bus full. Yeah, he is. That
double
is
decker
an appropriate
bus.
Nickname. Yeah, he looks good, though. He had a nice little jump shot because they had a, you know, on the party hole, they had a hoop set up.
What about Del Curry and Steph jumping into the lake? There's like some contest.
I didn't see that, but I did see Aaron Rodgers throw a football to a guy jumping off a boat, and he caught it and landed in the water. It was great, awesome. And they caught it on camera, too. I ended up seeing it go viral, but yeah, it was a very fan interactive tournament, but viva la France!
You could hear the Long Island there.
I was there for a while, too.
We heard the tournament. We tried to escape the soccer by talking about the celebrity.
Oh, yeah, I watched all of the soccer.
You want to keep doing
it? The secret
is... Did you see it?
Yeah, I love soccer. I love the World Cup. I watched most of the World Cup.
I would have called it a game, Jim. Well done.
Did you see a second of the whole entire World Cup, Dave?
No.
I didn't either.
Really?
I meant to watch it yesterday, but my kids were at a 3-on-3 tournament.
Croatia was wearing their best kits.
You know what? I have to admit, the reason why I didn't watch it, it's soccer.
Yeah, and I didn't have a bet on it. If I'd had a bet on it, I would have taken Croatia and whatever the odds were.
Yeah, France, I was part of a World Cup. We had a World Cup fantasy competition between me and my high school friends. Yeah, I lost. Argentina was my pick, and they were terrible. The only team that I got that got to the knockout round was Argentina. They were awful. But yeah, France wins. Vive la France.
Our buddy Josh Rosen thinks he can fix the NCAA by getting athletes paid upon graduation.
Okay, this is the pinhead's idea, which is, we're going to let athletes make money off of their own marketing.
I think we just need to let Dave talk here.
Okay. Have you heard Josh Rosen's plan? Do you want
of
me to tell you what
it is? To fix it? No, I have not. I saw the article and purposely did not read it because I knew I would be dumber after having read it.
What he thinks is that you can have athletes. We're not going to pay them for how they play, but let them market themselves. So if they can go get a contract with Under Armour or Nike or whatever, and some athletes will negotiate as a whole group, and there'll be like a group, so a whole team would be their marketing, or it could be individually as well.
Yeah, and so... Was he talking about putting it in a trust that they would get when they graduate, or that they would get it during?
They get it during.
Yeah.
Have to graduate, which is one of the things that I think actually makes a little more sense, because at least there's a reinforcement on the academic part of school.
Right. Why in the world would you make them graduate to get money that they're earning, though, because they're already exploited, if that's the way you believe about college athletes? Like, why? How does that fix it?
I think he was giving a little bit there.
Yeah. I think that's probably right, Jess. I agree with you there. But, you know, there's a lot of people squawking about, I don't want it. I don't want an education. Not everybody wants a college education. And I'm like, really? How come? You know, here's the other thing. I just feel like during college, you're meant to kind of scrap by, you know? Like, I was talking to a player who was like, I know a lot of guys that went to bed hungry. I'm like, I went to bed hungry too a lot, but you still got 3 hots and a cot. Give me a break. You get to play in these stadiums. You get all this equipment. You get a free education. What's so wrong with that? And there's very few guys, I think, that would be able to market themselves individually. Don't you think? Like, last year, think about in NCAA, who is really going to be? I mean, there's all these professional athletes to represent companies, but of all the guys that are in college, who is really going to go scramble after? How many players are really going to get big contracts? The running back at Penn State, Saquon Barkley, right? Maybe Love.
Baker Mayfield.
Here's the thing I always do with that, because people will tell you, like, they'll be all over it, and Sam Darnold get money because he's at USC. Tell me which companies all of those athletes endorse as pros. And most people don't know. And the reason is because pro football players as endorsers do not, like, they make scraps compared to what, like, an NBA player makes on their shoe deal.
Yeah.
People don't identify them with what clothes... Tell me which one of those guys is endorsed by Under Armour.
Yeah, I don't know. I know who endorses Beacon Plumbing and Acton's Roofing.
Yeah, Bobby Wagner.
Bobby Wagner's the honorary GM.
You know what?
GM.
He also won because Richard Sherman, after he left, now he's also the old boy Oberto endorser,
too.
Oh,
he got the Oberto thing, too.
Is he with Stephen A. Smith doing that?
Yes, he is. Hmm. Stephen A. Smith is the voice in his stomach.
I just love anything to do with Josh Rosen because I know how much Dave doesn't like him. So I want him to do well down there at Arizona. Yes. Not so well that they overtake the Seahawks, but yeah. And then maybe this will be, earthbreaking or earth-shattering, groundbreaking, whatever I'm looking for there. But
let's get
not.
The biggest jackass to come out of NCAA football to fix the most complicated problem. Josh Rosen. Yeah, absolutely.
It's Danny David Moore. We're off to a great start. The contest is underway. But the Mariners getting a much-needed break. We'll talk about what's next for them.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. Fear we may have lost Jim here for a little bit. It was not a good weekend for your Seattle Mariners, and it ended with a final kick to the stomach.
Nick, the windup, and the 2-2 pitch, swinging a high fly ball into left center field and deep. Gamble going back to the warning track, to the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Trevor Story with a walk-off home run here in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Rockies win it, a final score of 4-3.
I come here as a voice of patience, understanding, compassion, and to say don't freak out yet. There's no reason to freak out. There's no reason. Look, what's happened over the past 10 days has not been good. There's no way to gloss over that. It's been bad. But it was also kind of what we thought could happen for a team that has survived winning a disproportionate number of one-run games. And there's nothing that's happened over the past 10 days that should make you feel that the rug is certain to be yanked out from under you. It's not going to be easy, but any of this sort of feeling of, oh, I knew it, it's premature, it's rash, they're still in position to make the playoffs, they're fine.
Really?
Yes.
Well, they've lost 8 of their last 11 games.
That's correct.
I guess my feeling on it is the hopes of winning the division are maybe in jeopardy now. Maybe
Wait, what?
I might be going towards Jim, but... Not yet. It's too early. And one of the things that I'll be interested in seeing is coming out of the break, Houston goes to the Angels for 3 and to Colorado for 2. And I'm interested to see how they do against those two teams. And that, because it's the same road trip. It's a game shorter, but it's the same road trip that the Mariners just took. And if they come out of there and they win, 3 out of 5, I'll think, uh-oh. And that probably can't catch the Houston Astros. But, yeah, it was really disappointing to watch that.
Do you think they'll make the playoffs?
Yes. I do think they'll make the playoffs. I don't think the A's are gonna catch them. I think they'll fend them off. But and they've got, a bit of a tough schedule coming up. But by my view, I don't see anything tougher than what they had earlier. They had Boston at home, and then they went to the Yankees, and then – to Boston. I don't see anything. I mean, I know they got to go to the Dodgers, Arizona, but I don't see anything that's tougher than that.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And Danny, you make sense too. And the Gras, for that matter, on the show of record today, I heard him saying about every team goes through a stretch like this. It doesn't matter if you're a super team like the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Astros. They've all had stretches this year like the Mariners have just gone through. The only part of it that makes me think that the Mariners might blow it at this point is this a trend that we're going to see the rest of the year? Is this something that they've been lucky to avoid, and now we're seeing more of their true colors? I don't think so either. I don't want to think that. And yet I look at I have concerns about the rotation and then concerns about the offense. Now, are those things magically going to get better than what we've seen in the last 2 weeks? Is that just an aberration, what we've been seeing for 2 weeks? I don't know. I like to think that it's not, but it could be a trend for the rest of the season, and the A's might catch them.
Do you think the Mariners make the playoffs?
No, right now I don't. I think they're going to blow it. I don't want them to blow it, but just based on what we've seen the last 2 weeks, you kind of go, oh, man. I went from thinking they were going to win every game to wondering if they're ever going to win again. It's a long season. You flip-flop with your emotions all the time, and I'm sure that when the White Sox get to town, if they sweep the White Sox, a bad team, then you'll feel better about things. But right now, I've got serious questions about whether they're going to hold off the A's.
So, okay, I was going to ask you. So you think the A's are the ones that are going to knock them off? Look at the run differential. It went down to -2 now. And they've still got a 3-game lead on the A's, but the A's at least are +24 and Houston at -188 right now. But look, that's your only threat right now from what it looks like. The rest of the league, the A's. That's pretty much it. Maybe the Angels still, but yeah, the Oakland A's right now in the way they're playing.
The other things, the A's have played as well as the A's are going to play all year. Like I can't imagine that a team like that, and if they do stay this hot, they're a historical aberration, and it's a comet that's coming roaring up from behind you. That's as hot as a team can get. And they're still 3 games back of you. And if it was a different type of team, if it was a team that started out slow because of injuries or something else. The A's are a team that are pretty similar to Seattle in terms of how many close games they've won. I think they've got the most comeback victories in the league. It's like 7 games that they've won when they've been trailing after the 7th inning. They've scored 69 runs going into the weekend in the 8th inning, which was the most of any team in Major League Baseball. They're a team that, as much as you point and say the Mariners, hey, I don't know how sustainable it is because of things like the run differential, well, the A's are in a similar boat when it comes to how they've won games and their success in close games and their comebacks. So I look at it and think that we're reacting to what we've seen over the past 2 weeks and overreacting to it because of that. I do think that the question or the chance for the Mariners to catch the Astros, I think that that might be evaporating, and we might, by the time August gets here, that's not even going to be something that we're talking about. But I still firmly believe that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs.
Well, which do you think is more of a concern, the rotation or the offense?
The rotation, because the offense is going to get better when Cano gets back.
Well, you still got another month until that.
Got 25 games until he gets back. What are you going to change about their offense right now? I guess Healy would be one of the considerations. He's playing at about replacement level overall. He gives you good defense, but that's probably somewhere you're going to look to put Cano when he gets in here. I do think the one thing that's changed is anybody thinking like, hey, do you play Cano every day? Yes, you play Cano every day, and every day he hits third. Every single day he hits third.
Yeah, ride him like Seattle Slough.
And we say that, hey,
get your money's worth out of him.
You've had the last 80 games off. Buckle up, because we're gonna absolutely be digging it.
This is probably typical of what happens, though. We've talked about it before, where you lose a key player like that, everybody rallies the troops, they galvanize, all those kind of words, and they hold down the fort for a while. But eventually, and I felt that way too. I thought, well, what do they need Robinson Cano for? And then now you think about it, and you go, well, how could I have thought that? I mean, you think about a Hall of Fame hitter that's not in that lineup, your number three guy, and what he produces. So it's going to be good to see him back. I'm anxious for August 15th to hurry up and get here.
Were you guys disappointed to see that they averaged less than 4 runs in Colorado? And to me, that's a bigger disappointment. And look, I mean, if the rotation starts to break down a little bit, and maybe, you know, Miley and Leak are giving up an extra couple runs or whatever, you think, man, that can always be fixed by good offense. That's been what has really brought me down, other than scoring 7. And they scored 1 run and 3 runs there. And then same thing when they were in L.A. With the Angels, they only scored 8 runs in 3 games. And that's, to me, that's the bigger disappointment and the bigger, like, uh-oh feeling than it is with your rotation getting hit a couple extra times a game.
The other part of it, though, is that they did face a hot Rockies team. They took 2 or 3 here in Seattle. They swept them there in Denver. They've won 13 of 16, so it's not like it's a bad team that you had problems with. So there is that. I'm trying really hard here, but maybe it's just the feelings from the past where you just go, uh-oh.
You're not trying very hard if you judge from what I read on 710 Sports today.
Yeah, well, I just honestly, I feel like they're going to blow it. I don't want to feel that way, but don't you, a little bit?
Do I feel they're going to blow it? No.
Well, there's got to be
a
part of you.
I'm not going to roll over.
No, but if you've been watching the team the last 10 days.
I'm not going to give in to the sort of the what's happened the past 2 weeks and let that trump what's happened the past 3 months.
So is the rotation magically going to get better?
Sure.
I mean, Paxton, he'll come back,
yeah,
and there won't be any back problems.
Back injury guy comes back all the time.
Hey, can I just criticize you two guys? You didn't catch me saying Wed Miley again?
No, I did, but I didn't want to correct you.
Well, can you please do that?
I didn't hear it.
That would have been twice.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
Well, you got the Wade right. I mean,
I'm just going to call him Wade from now on.
Wade for it. We got more coming up next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
First observation from Jim Moore's Twitter page. Man, River's got a long tongue.
He does. He was yawning.
That was
last night.
Was he watching the Mariner game?
It fully looks like it's more than a foot long.
Yeah, he's not under the weather. He's got a sore paw right now. I might have to take him.
Did he step on
tomorrow.
Something?
Yeah, I think so. Or he might be lethargic because of the weather too.
He's probably got a sore tongue.
Yeah, seriously, how long that thing is.
Yeah.
Here's the other observation, is Jim Moore posted a Twitter poll today, which was, think the Mariners will make the playoffs or blow it all together? ? They'll make it, you idiot. They'll blow it. They'll catch the Astros. Sick of Twitter polls. was one of the options there.
That's probably what I would have voted. Aren't you? Everybody's running a Twitter poll now.
I took the opportunity to call you an idiot.
Oh, did you?
And I voted, but then it made me sign up for Twitter, which I didn't.
Yeah, so. At least I know the Wade here in Seattle is LeBlanc and not Miley anymore.
I don't.
10% say there. More people are sick of Twitter polls than think the Mariners will catch the Astros. 38% say they'll make it. 44% voting with they're not going to make it, which I think is just a symptom of 17 years of frustration, that when this happens, this sort of here we go again feeling kicks in. They're going to have a stretch of games that were going to be like this. And the fact that it happened on a trip that included three games in a National League park where Nelson Cruz is relegated to pinch hitter duty, you have to think about that. When the season started, essentially the Mariners played those three games without their three and four hitters. And the fact that they struggled to score runs even in Colorado, while concerning, not entirely surprising.
Yeah, well, and then they're playing with a third and fourth string catcher. Although, you know, I like those guys. Those guys seem like they're okay. I heard Stelton saying, though, that they're not very good at throwing guys out compared to Zunino. They're not calling a game like Zunino would and framing it so defensively. But it occurred to me, at what point would Zunino's average have to drop where his defensive strengths are overcome by his hitting weaknesses? I mean, we're at 189 right now. So is it 179 where you go, Mike, you better go down to Tacoma? Or are you still good with him at 169, 179? Where is the cutoff line on Mike Zunino's a great defensive catcher?
Let me ask this. Does he still hit 450-foot home runs?
I get kind of tired of that, too.
Do you care how far
the
home
runs go? How about just, you know, hit some singles and doubles and you know, give me a 200-foot single, a seeing-eyes single every once in a while, and cut down on the strikeouts.
No.
And then forget the second deck stuff. I mean, I like that, too.
I care about that. I care about the long home runs.
I do, too. I want to hear it.
Mr. Threewood likes the long home runs.
Yeah. Smashes them. Let me ask you this. Has Healy gotten into that same range, and he has less of a hitting problem? But defensively, man, I admire the heck out of that guy. I think he's underrated defensively. And he's got 18 home runs. So, I mean, if Zunino can get up there and, you know, start hitting the home runs, he's got 12 right now. But Healy, man, every time I see him, he's picking a ball, making just a gem of a play on defense. And, you know, he's slumping a little bit. And that's been the problem. I mean, look, we have not looked back and said, well, they don't have Zunino, they didn't have Paxton, they didn't have, you know, Felix in the rotation, because everybody's always stepped up. Well, this is one road series where that didn't happen. People did not step up. Healy maybe slumping a little bit. You didn't get, you know, what you would like out of Heredia. I mean, there's lots of those things have happened in the past, and now they're just not happening. And I feel like this team is going to continue to pick themselves up. I just think it's going to be really difficult for them to catch Houston. But I'll say this, watch after the All-Star break of how Houston's record is on the road. They got a five-game road trip that's, I think, two in Colorado and three in Anaheim against the Angels, and then we'll see how tough those two teams are.
Here's the challenge the Mariners have. The trading deadline's coming up, the non-waiver, or where nobody has to clear waivers. The free and clear trade deadline is coming up. If you're going to make improvements to this Mariners lineup or this team right now, obviously starting pitching is A1 priority, but that's going to be the most expensive. If you're going to add a hitter to this lineup, which they could use right now, it's complicated by how things are going to change when Robinson Cano comes back. Do you add a center fielder? That would be the natural upgrade for the outfield position, to have somebody play instead of Guillermo Heredia every day. And then you've got Gamble and Span serving as a platoon in the left field, or alternating getting both of those guys opportunities. I don't really like it when they put Haniger in center and play both of those guys, but that's also an option that's there. Is it first base? Healy's got pretty good power, but he's gone through a couple of prolonged slumps and isn't hitting particularly well right now. He would be a guy that you could get more production from first base, but he's really good defensively. They've got some interesting challenges here, but I just ultimately think that if this had happened in reverse, if the Mariners had played, if they had started July the way they started June, we would feel that this team is a house of fire, even if they had the exact same record. And don't let the fact that their bad stretch of road happened here over the past 2 weeks make you think that this team's in a crisis, because it's not.
Yeah, you're probably right, because after they lost, one of the texters was saying that after they lost in New York and Boston, they rallied well from that. And but the two teams that they just lost to, the Anaheim and Colorado, are not nearly the caliber of the Yankees and the Red Sox. So we'll see. I'm with you on that. I think there's enough there, though, to be concerned about. I noticed Brent Stecker, the 710sports.com editor, mentioning that in his piece today that since June 1st, your leadoff guy, D. Gordon, and we knew that he wasn't a control-the-zone guy and that he was going to work the pitcher-type guy, but your leadoff hitter has two walks since June 1st. Which, you know, I know everybody loves D. Gordon, his enthusiasm and everything else, but that's, you know, another thing to keep an eye on.
You remember what he said when he came here?
Yeah, he doesn't walk.
Yeah, I don't walk.
You cannot worry about a guy not doing something you knew he wasn't going to do.
Well, I can worry about whatever I want to worry about, though, I think. Can I?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's America. Fair point.
It's not a great comeback, but that's all I have
at
the
moment. Fair point. We got the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next.